Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, wherever you are in the world, welcome to Visions. I am Unity Wickham Ashby, and today we're going to look at physiatry. I have in the studio with me a Barbadian who has migrated to the USA, and his field of work is physiatry. Welcome to the program, Dr. Shane Drakes.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Shane, first of all, some people might be saying, what? Physiatry? You mean podiatry?
Yeah.
Explain what it is.
Yeah, we get that a lot. People are not sure what you're talking about. If you write it out with the spelling, sometimes they think that you mean psychiatry and you've you've done a typo. Okay. But physiatry is basically the shortened form of saying physical medicine and rehabilitation. And physical medicine and rehabilitation is the medical specialty that deals with persons who have impairments in physical function. And this can be the result of things that you are born with, so congenital issues. For instance, there are some children who are born without a limb or without part of a limb, or things that you may acquire as you get older. So, for instance, someone was born without part of a limb. Someone may get an amputation because they had poor circulation and developed an infection in the leg, and the leg became gangrenous and so on, and an amputation was needed. Things such as strokes, spinal cord injuries, arthritis, and various other things that can cause physical impairment.
Okay, so then what role do you play then in this area?
Right, so we play a role as team members and also as team leaders in different areas of rehabilitation. So the rehab team normally would consist of generally physiatrists or physical medicine rehabilitation specialists. You may have therapists as needed. So, for instance, if you have arthritis in your knee, you may see a physiatrist and then you may go to a physical therapist who will actually put you through the program. Whereas the physiatrist is going to kind of take an overall management perspective, help you manage your pain, whether it's by prescribing oral medications or by doing an injection of some kind of pain medicine into the joint. Someone with a stroke, for instance, you know, they may have multiple impairments. So they may have an issue with their arm, an issue with their leg. They may have an issue with speaking, understanding, communicating. So someone like that will need not only physical therapy to work on their standing, their walking, and so on. Occupational therapy, which is going to work more on their upper limb, strengthening the upper limb and teaching them to do their daily activities that they kind of took for granted before, that we all kind of take for granted. And then the speech therapist who's going to work with them on communicating. Added to that, if they're on inpatient rehab, which is usually where in developed countries they would go after they've had their initial hospitalization after the stroke, there's going to be nurses. There's going to be social workers, because you have to look at where is this person going to go when they're discharged from the unit. So you have to get their family involved. The social worker looks at the family dynamic and all these things. And you have to kind of prepare the family for this person coming back out into the community, because obviously they're coming back out different than how they were before they were admitted. And if this was someone who was working, then, you know, you probably have like a vocational therapist who is trying to see, can we get this person back into the workforce in some way or not?
Right. So it really is a team effort to help the individual, whether it's a child, teenager, young adult, or an older adult, to fit right back in to the scheme of life and do some of their tasks themselves, so that they feel independent, confident about doing it, and still being able to be a part of family, a part of society. Yeah?
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely a team effort. We look at ourselves as physicians that are dealing with quality of life as well.
Yes.
If you think, you know, in years past, if someone had a stroke, some people actually died after, you know, after a stroke or a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, our doctors who are internists and intensive care specialists and so on, we can save those persons' lives and they can live longer, but they have some impairment. You do want to add some quality to their lives. So for a lot of people, or I would say for most people, being independent, being able to do things for yourself is as important as being able to continue living. So there is a saying that physiatrists add life to people's years.
I like the sound of that. Yeah. So tell us, Shane, where would you have studied this area? Because it's a relatively new discipline.
Yeah, so this is, I would say, pretty new to this region.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, we have in, let's say, CARICOM, for instance, we have probably about 3 or 4 physiatrists for the number of people in CARICOM. Some time ago, I worked that out. We were probably talking about over, what, maybe 15 million or something like that. And yeah, so there are like 3 or 4 people. So Trinidad has one, Jamaica has one, Barbados has 1 or 2, and in the Bahamas there's one. Then there are many other islands, and Guyana, which is not an island but a territory, which don't have any physiatrists. But in terms of where I studied, I was in New York. I went there in 2010 and I did internship first there. I had done internship here before, but when you go to the U.S., a lot of times they don't give you the credit for some of the stuff that you did before. So I had to do internship over again.
Mm-hmm.
After internship, I did 3 years in physical medicine rehabilitation residency. And then I did another year in sports medicine fellowship.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that means then that you can work with sports people.
Yes, and I have done some stuff with the Barbados Rugby Federation. There's usually a big, I would say, international rugby tournament that normally happens here every December, early December. I've worked at that a couple of times. I've worked at a couple of international matches that they've had. I was a member of the Sports Medicine Association before I left, and I also went to the Commonwealth Games with the Barbados contingent in 2018.
Nice. So would your work differ vastly with sports people as opposed to individuals who may have other impairments like strokes and so on?
So generally you're looking at two different demographics, with different needs.
Mm-hmm.
So the persons with the strokes, the spinal cord injuries, the multiple sclerosis, those types of things, generally they have lost function and they're trying to get back to some sense of normality.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you're dealing with athletes, these are usually people that have gone past the normal function and they're usually coming to see you because they can't perform at their usual level in that sport. So in terms of just moving around and doing things, a lot of them can do that stuff very easily. And that's not a problem, but it's more the fact that, okay, you know, I injured my hamstring and now I can't sprint, or my shoulder hurts and now I can't bowl as fast as I did before I injured my shoulder. You know, those types of things. So it's definitely different. Also, most of the athletes that I've seen and treated are usually younger, whereas definitely in terms of stroke patients and cardiac patients, it's generally more middle-aged to to older. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that we don't treat older athletes or older persons who are very active, because, you know, there are masters athletics competitions and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Dr. Drates, what are your thoughts about rehabilitation in Barbados? Because I know that at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, we have the physiotherapy department. We do have a physiatrist there as well, who will work with the physio and occupational therapists to really guide and support those individuals with their various impairments and disabilities. What would you like to see build out at the QEH to really help us add, as you say, quality to the individuals' lives?
Oh, where to start? I think there are several things that can be done. For instance, we have one physiatrist. So if we look at per capita, or looking at the ratio in terms of the population to the number of specialists, we're doing better than Trinidad and Jamaica, because they have much larger populations and also only have one physiatrist. But I think that the physiatrist that's at the QEH would also tell you that he can't do all of it himself, or at least not in a timely fashion.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause when you look at the things that they're grappling with, we have something like 40 strokes or more in a month. So those are a lot of people that need assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we have quite a few amputations every year as well. And after that, you know, then there are all the other things. So there are people who get into car accidents and get traumatic brain injury. There are few spinal cord injuries every year, unfortunately. There are people with arthritis and many other issues that can lead to impairment of physical functioning. So I think there needs to be more than one physiatrist. There are some younger doctors that are coming up that I've spoken to in the past who have expressed an interest in physiatry. So hopefully they will keep that interest and go on to specialize in the field. But after they've done that, there does need to be a place for them to return and actually feel that they can contribute something.
Mm-hmm.
So I would start with that. I think definitely there needs to be more physical therapists. The physical therapists right now are dividing their time between the inpatient, so going to the different wards, and also the persons that are coming for outpatient physical therapy. So if you get discharged from the hospital after your stroke and you're going to get physical therapy, outpatient physical therapy, you know, that there's no guarantee that that's going to start in a timely fashion. As a matter of fact, I've met many people before who could not get an appointment for about maybe 2 months or so. So, and after you have a stroke, we usually talk about a window of time where you really want to have intensive therapy going on. So if their appointment for outpatient therapy after they were discharged is delayed by 2 months or whatever it is, 6 weeks, then you know that window has been already shortened a bit. The other big area is occupational therapy. Mm-hmm. There are only two occupational therapists.
Yes.
And they're dealing with everything from the people with the strokes and the spinal cord injuries to the people who may have been, you know, cut. So, you know, for instance, unfortunately, there's a lot of violent acts in Barbados right now. And, you know, I've seen someone, when I visited the occupational therapy department, I saw a young man who had the tendons in his hand were cut. And that was a result of trying to stop someone who was attacking him with a machete.
Oh.
So all these things are things that we have two occupational therapists to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
I also, if I'm remembering correctly, I think there isn't any speech therapist that is working directly at the hospital. So that is another challenge. So I think there are a lot of challenges. There needs to be more
manpower,
more personnel in the department. I think that something to aim for would be some kind of inpatient rehab unit. I think that would be good because you get to utilize that window to do intensive therapy to see if you can get people to have some recovery before they're discharged. Mm-hmm. And it also gives you a chance to educate the family and prepare them for what to expect when this person is discharged from the hospital, as opposed to just saying, okay, well, you know, your dad or your mom is ready for discharge and, you know, they're not prepared. They haven't put in the safety equipment, like the grab bars.
Right.
They haven't, you know, had a ramp, you know, put it at the house because you have to use a wheelchair and the steps are not going to, work.
No.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. there's a lot of things, but I think it needs a lot of buy-in from
the decision-makers.
The decision-makers. I think, unfortunately, so far they have not seen it as a priority area. But at the same time, you know, we're always hearing about the fact that we have an aging population, right? And with age, we know that, unfortunately, a lot of impairments
come
along.
Yes.
So if you have an aging population and we know that impairments usually tend to follow age, this is an area that you do need to kind of invest in.
Right. And we do have lots of vehicular accidents that sometimes are not reported in the news, yes, but they still leave traumatic injuries to the to the individuals, as well as home accidents. Again, you don't hear a lot about those, but again, people do acquire disabilities or impairments as a result. What would you say, from your experience, what has the family support been like for individuals who would have gone through some measure of rehabilitation and are returning home?
So I think it varies. There are some persons who I think can't, or they see themselves as really not able to cope with it. But I think part of that is probably that they were not adequately educated about what to expect. They were not prepared about, you know, these are the impairments. This is what your family member is probably going to need from you. Mm-hmm. Those types of things. Mm-hmm. There's also the fact that you know, most younger people are going to be working,
and right,
there is a concern that, you know, your elderly relative is going to be at home by themselves, and so forth. Mm-hmm. So you still do have issues with that. But people that I've seen in the office or at the Heart and Stroke Foundation, when I was doing some work there with the stroke patients, I think the family members did give them a lot of support in terms of, okay, yes, you know, you need to go through this rehabilitation process. They would encourage them to stick with the advice, the medical advice and the rehabilitation advice, because one of the things that I always stress was, okay, yes, you're doing therapy, you're doing exercise, but don't just do it when you go to therapy, mm-hmm, or when you come here, you know, because an easy way that, you know, to kind of break it down to people is there's 7 days in a week. You go to therapy twice a week. If you only do exercises twice a week, that's 5 days of the week you're not doing anything. Unless you're using some really weird brand of mathematics, there's no way that two equals more than five. So, you know, when I kind of put it to them like that, then they kind of understand you know, I should be doing more. I should be trying to do this, you know, as many days of the week as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. So I found that those family members that I encountered, as I said, either in the office or at the Heart and Stroke Foundation, we're very interested in
giving the support.
Yeah, okay. Very, very interested in supporting the family members. Just one thing that I found that they kind of did, which I think I kind of had to push back a little bit against, is that they would tell their relative, okay, well, you know, you had a stroke, like, take it easy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this thing or this concept that, okay, you had a stroke because you were trying to do too much or whatever. And yes, you know, stress plays a role in terms of your blood pressure and so on, but you need to be doing what you can as much as you can. That way you keep your function.
Right.
If you sit around and don't use it, most likely you're going to lose it.
Right. Okay. So, Dr. Drace, why did you leave Barbados? I guess that's an unfair question, but I'm thinking you're needed so much here in our homeland. You know, I really am sorry that you had to migrate. So tell us what you're doing now in the U.S.
Okay, so I'm back at the hospital that I did my specialization and subspecialization at, which is Montefiore Medical Center, and that's in the Bronx in New York. So I have, I would say, you can think of it as three different roles, but they're kind of intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm an attending physician in the Department of Rehabilitation Medicine at Montefiore Medical Center.
And what does attending physician mean?
Yeah, so you know, Americans are always different to, or try to be different from the British. So we, in the British system, like Barbados and our neighbors, we say consultant.
Okay.
Right? And the British would say consultant. In America, it's attending.
Okay,
so
okay.
An attending physician is equivalent to the consultant here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm an attending physician in the Department of Rehabilitation Medicine. I am the director of the Sports Medicine Fellowship at Montefiore Medical Center as well.
Okay, break that down again.
Right, so the Sports Medicine Fellowship is basically the subspecialty program, which is 1 year, where we train persons who've graduated from residency in either physical medicine and rehabilitation, emergency medicine, internal medicine, or family medicine. Those main four. So they graduated from their residency programs, and now they want to further their knowledge in sports medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the program that I did back in 2014 to 2015, and so now I'm basically leading that program. So
okay,
we have them come to us for 1 year. Previously we had two fellows. Next year we're gonna have three fellows. So we educate them clinically in terms of, you know, they see patients with us and so on. They work with sporting teams. So there's a college that has that's nearby that has a few teams. There are a couple of high schools, so they do some coverage of the high school football games. This is American football, not what we call football, which Right. They call soccer. And then they do some procedures. So we do a variety of injections using the ultrasound guidance. So mm-hmm. And ultrasound is really huge in sports medicine now, and also in some other fields. But we use it mostly for musculoskeletal evaluation, so we can evaluate for tendon injury, for joint injury, for muscle tears, ligament tears, all these types of things. So mm-hmm. we also have a lecture schedule for them. So I give some lectures, the other faculty give some lectures, and we have some persons from outside the group that come and give lectures as well.
Wonderful.
So that's the second role. And then the third role is Montefiore is the university hospital for Albert Einstein College of Medicine, which is medical school in the Bronx, and I am an assistant professor of rehabilitation medicine at Albert Einstein College of Medicine as well.
Well, I think I know what a professor does.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Drakes, as an assistant professor, I'm thinking, wow, you're doing great work in the U.S., and we need some of your skills here in Barbados. How do you see, or what can we do to reach, you know, this point where physiatry can be a part of our training in the medical program here at UWI, University of the West Indies Cape Hill campus?
All right. So I think the first thing is that you have to get the buy-in of the decision makers again. So, I did reach out to some decision makers at UWI before, but I don't think physiatry is seen as a priority, and that may be because of the stature of it in terms of it being relatively new to a lot of people as compared to the more traditional fields,
right,
such as internal medicine, surgery, etc. But I think that's one of the most crucial things. And then once you have that, then you need to have individuals who are already trained in physiatry who would be able to basically act as lecturers and mentors to give medical students that exposure to the field, give them that education, and then things can go from there. I mean, we have at UWI, we have subspecialty programs or residency programs, which we call DMs, in many areas, and it's not impossible that you can have physiatry as one of those, provided that you have all those things that we just discussed.
Okay, nice.
So, yeah, regarding why I migrated, I was here for almost 4 years, and I felt like things weren't really going for me the way that I would have liked. So, Montefiore reached out to me with this offer to do take up this position, and I thought that, you know, it was difficult to turn down that offer at that stage, because I would be able to do the things that I wanted to do, which in terms of being busy, seeing a lot of different patients, working in the sports medicine field, and then getting to teach the fellows, the residents, and the medical students from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine. So those are all things that I wanted to do here, which unfortunately didn't work out, but never know what the future may bring.
We never know. Well, Dr. Shane Drakes, I want to say thank you very much, not only for being a Barbadian, which you have no control over, but definitely being one of excellence, giving excellent service, and really contributing to our own development as well. So I want to say thank you, and I'm extremely proud of you as a physiatrist.
Thank you for your kind words, and thank you for having me on the program.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudley Wickham Ashby, and my special guest today, Dr. Shane Drakes, a physiatrist. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660. You can WhatsApp me on that mobile number as well. And you can also reach me here at StarCom 1-246-430-7300. And of course, you can email me at visionsbarbados@gmail.com. That is visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And of course, I want to encourage you to go on the VOB929.com website. Look for the podcast link, scroll down until you find Visions Radio Program, and you can listen to this and other past episodes. So until next week, be safe and love yourself.